World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 118, we discuss our opinions about the Premier League Fan Fest in Boston, why interest in soccer is growing in the United States, but not in MLS, FCC delivers a blow to Beansport's chances of returning to Comcast, DirecTV gets egg on its face, the Bundesliga finally gets some love from Fox, plus letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, let's jump right in, because we've got a lot to cover in this podcast. What have you been watching? I know you've had a really busy week, but what's your past week been like for listeners?
So I've watched very little non-domestic football. Hoffenheim Leverkusen I watched, Roma-Napoli, which was Ranieri. This might be Ranieri's last job, the way things are going at Roma, the way things went at Fulham, the way things went at Nantes. That magic of Leicester City and that reputation he had of being the almost man, finishing second time and again with other clubs, that seems to be really in the rearview mirror now. Hanover, Schalke, Manchester United and Wolves, which was a very entertaining match on Tuesday night, I believe it would have been Tuesday. The days are confusing me this week. Monday I did not even remember about the Arsenal game, and then the Wolves match on Tuesday night. So I have not seen a whole lot. Hanover Schalke I also watched. I also watched the second half of Cardiff and Chelsea, which was obviously very controversial. Mm-hmm. And a lot of a heavy dose, and this is what typically happens when I don't watch a lot of football, a heavy dose of ESPN FC. I've seen that all week, seen or listened to that all week.
Okay, so we'll get into what's been going on in terms of why you haven't been able to watch as much soccer this week in a little bit. But before we get to that, which is definitely directly related to soccer, before we get to that, I mean, some of the games I watched this past week, I'm going to jump around a lot. I watched, of course, the Spurs against Crystal Palace game on Wednesday. I thought that, yeah, I was going to say ESPN, NBCSN did a fantastic job of the with the pre-match coverage on this one. Talking about the stadium, what it means to not just the club themselves, but to the league. This is the first soccer-specific stadium in the United Kingdom in 10 years that's been built specifically for soccer, and the stadium is absolutely incredible. So that was interesting. They also had a segment about the Hillsborough trial, an update on that. I thought that was really well done. Like you, Kartik, I watched the Wolves-Man United game. Really a great match in that one. Arsenal-Newcastle on Monday. I watched Sunday night. I watched Orlando against DC United. And the atmosphere was really good in the stadium. It came across through the television set really well. It was a pretty entertaining game. I would say pretty in that if only Orlando was a better team, this could have been more of a really good fight in that second half. Still, it was a good watch. And this one was interesting because there was commentary by Jake Zevin, who teamed up with Alexi Lalas. And Jake is new to commentating, and he's new to Fox, and in terms of being on television. And I thought he did a decent job. He reminded me of a young, more energetic, and more authentic Rob Stone. This past week, too, I also watched Celtic against Rangers on Sunday morning. This one, again, it's Bleacher Report Live. I'm still having issues. I mean, so I know throughout the season, off and on, I think, Kartik, you've had issues. I've had a couple of issues. Other times, it's been fine. But I was watching this one, and oftentimes, the stream would lock up on my Chrome web browser. So I'd have to go ahead and restart the browser or refresh the page, come back, and then after a minute it would work. And this happened several times, and I've got a fiber connection here from my home office, but the game itself was good. A nasty game, actually, in some ways. Rangers really, some nasty fouls, but overall it was an entertaining game to watch. Liverpool against Spurs, what a finish to this game. What an ending to this game. And we'll get more into that in a little bit. Fulham Man City. And what else did I watch? A couple of other games too. But that's the majority of the games I watched. A couple of things that were of interest to me were I watched and listened to an interview with Peter Drury this week, which is on YouTube. It's on a channel called TIFO Football, and I'd highly recommend it. It's about a 45 minutes to 50 minute interview with Peter Drury, which is rare. You get to see Peter Drury on TV now and again, but it's just extremely rare. It's rare because he goes in, he discusses the art of commentating, just like we've done some great interviews in the past with John Champion and many others. This one goes in depth into the art of commentating and going through Peter's background, his career, but asking some really kind of great questions as far as finding out more about behind the scenes. What is interesting to me in this interview, though, is that it comes out really strong in terms of the reason that Peter is not on social media, and he's really self-conscious. He's really self-conscious about getting feedback from and criticism from fans, and he thinks that that could change the way that he commentates. So he stays off social media. His son or his two sons kind of let him know from time to time, like if there's any positive feedback or anything negative, whatever. But he stays off it. And I think that Peter Drury, the commentator, is one of the best. But one of the reasons he's not on a level with, say, a John Champion or an Ian Dark or others that are very popular in the United States is that Peter doesn't step outside of the commentating role and is not active on social media, doesn't do a lot of interviews. And this is a really good opportunity to actually kind of find out more about Peter this way. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that's who he is, and he's a different type of individual than, say, a John Champion or a Derek Ray, who are very social media friendly. Now, Kartik, one of the reasons why I probably got to watch a ton of the Premier League Fan Fest this past weekend on NBC, and you didn't, was for a very good reason. And I wanted you kind of to share some thoughts in terms of where you were and what were some of the big messages that came out of where you were at?
Yeah, so I was at the Soccer Summit, Boca Soccer Summit, which was the follow-up for lower division teams to the Chattanooga Soccer Summit, the much-acclaimed Chattanooga Soccer Summit a year ago, or a little bit over a year ago, in 2018, that followed the USSF election and the dissatisfaction that a lot of the amateur clubs and independent clubs around the country had with the election of Carlos Cordero as USSF president, and just in general the whole scene where the feeling is that there is preferential treatment, at least, or the deck is stacked, however you want to look at it, the scales are tipped towards MLS and USL. So I think one of the things that was really a big talking point to come out of this conversation we had at the summit this weekend, Chris, was that there is an empowerment of leagues over clubs in the United States because of the closed system. And while we can say some leagues are better than others, that's certainly true. They're all closed leagues, right? Essentially, they're all leagues that that have either a closed league structure or a franchise structure. So even the leagues that have a lower barrier of entry and may even have pro rel within them, have some degree of third-party ownership or private ownership of the league structure to where the league is looking to make money or is looking to at least offset all its operating costs, and they pass that burden on to clubs. So that's just part of the closed structure, right? That's part of allowing leagues to have private owners. There was a lot of discussion about, you know, who are the soccer fans? Who do you engage? Is it casual sports fans? Is it hardcore soccer fans? Is it hipsters? Is it soccer moms? Who is it? So that was a big talking point, as was the general kind of dissatisfaction with the lack of interest and lack of facilitation of these things that U.S. soccer does, and how U.S. soccer is essentially an absentee landlord that's off doing their own thing. And then, quite frankly, in many markets, the lack of interest of MLS teams in the local amateur scene. What they do is they go and recreate their own structure, their own pyramid. And that MLS in the last 4 or 5 years has shown a lack of interest in the adult and amateur game, which was not always the case. I think one of the things that frustrates people at the lower division level is up until about 2013, 2014, MLS had a lot of interest in what was going on in the lower divisions outside USL. They were heavily involved and somewhat invested in adult soccer in this country. And all of that promptly stopped in around 2013, 2014, as they hit year 20, and as they brought New York City and Chicago and Orlando into the league, changed the league's branding. And since then, they've been less of a partner, quite frankly, with everybody. So that's yep. That was one of the other big takeaways from this.
And this has a direct connection, correlation to television in terms of, you mean, the podcast really goes into talking more about the media and television. A few months ago, I had a conversation with a multimillionaire who has invested in, I think, about 3 soccer clubs overseas. And I asked him, I said, like, why aren't you investing in Major League Soccer? Why aren't you investing in some of the lower leagues in the U.S. soccer pyramid? It's not really a pyramid, but you know what I mean. And he said, well, he said, I can go ahead and invest in a team in, say, Ireland or in Holland. It could be a smaller club. It could be a club that's maybe, say, a Division II club. Or even a Division III club, but there's an opportunity that there's a path there to go ahead and maybe move that club up into maybe the top tier, the top division, and not be one of the biggest teams in the league, but have a direct path to entering into the Europa League. And it's, with the Europa League, it's guaranteed TV revenue. There's guaranteed millions of dollars in terms of revenue that you can generate. As just one example. And he said, with the soccer structure in the United States, there is no path like that. If you invest in a USL team, there's no guarantee that that team will eventually move up to Major League Soccer. And even then, the actual expansion fees for those teams are really highly inflated, is what he said. So that's why he's looking overseas. He's looking overseas because, and it really kind of comes back to television. That is the path. So for teams in the United States who are in the lower levels, it's tough because, I mean, that dream of having a team, your local team, go ahead and maybe advance from one division to the next division, that maybe someday that team could go all the way through to, I mean, the top division or the second division. That doesn't exist today, Kartik, and that's one of the main problems, main reasons that we have a huge problem in this country as far as trying to grow soccer. Now, Kartik, while you were watching or attending the Boca Soccer Summit and speaking with a lot of lower league owners, etc., from that side of things, I was knee deep in watching the Premier League Fan Fest from Boston, and I have to say, this was my favorite one of all of them. This is the third one they've done this season. I think they did one last season, so it's the fourth one they've done. But it really, to me, had made a great connection with the soccer culture in the United States, which a lot of that culture is going to pubs or bars and watching games there. And doesn't necessarily have to be the Premier League. It could be other leagues too. It could be Major League Soccer. It could be whatever it may be. But that pub culture. And what's unique about the United States is that, as opposed to other countries, where if you went into Madrid and had, say, I don't know, a Barcelona, Real Madrid fans getting together to watch a game in a pub, that doesn't exist because there would be fights, it would be riots, whatever there may be. Same thing in England, too, is that what's unique about the United States is that you're able to actually have fans from opposing clubs hanging out, a little bit of banter, singing, etc. And NBCSN did a fantastic job of capturing that too. They've perfected the formula in terms of interviewing players, talking to fans. A lot of the interviews that they did, or conversations they had, were fans asking them how they became a fan. How long have they been supporting the club? What is their connection to the club, etc. It was Kartik. I'm not sure if you got a chance to watch any of it, but from Sunday to all the way through from Saturday all the way through to Sunday, I was just blown away by how good this was. And to me, the Premier League's doing more to promote soccer in the US than MLS and USSF are doing combined.
I would strongly disagree with that statement, that last statement. Strongly disagree with it. I think the Premier League is engaging existing Premier League fans who they want to watch their league. Like I said, until 2013, 2014, Major League Soccer did a lot on the grassroots level. And I know this show turns into bash MLS a lot. I don't think it should be, because I think MLS in its history has done a lot of good things. We're in a much better place.
Okay. So what about lately, though? So what about lately?
No. But you can't discount what they did between 1996 and 2014. You can't say, oh, well, then the Premier League, because they have a couple fan fests engaging with existing Premier League fans, who, by the way, one of the talking points at this summit was you talk to Premier League fans about coming out to watch local soccer, and they shut the door in your face. So they're Premier League fans. They're Liverpool fans.
Yeah, but why is that, Kartik? Why is that?
There are many reasons.
No, but the main reason is because there's no promotion relegation. There's no hope of that local club going advancing.
One of the main reasons is snobbery, because they won't watch Major League Soccer in their towns in a lot of cases. I think one of the main reasons it's not, these people won't even watch the Bundesliga or La Liga. They'll constantly tell you the Premier League is better, the Premier League is more entertaining. All of that might be true, but that's one of the big reasons. U.S. soccer is a governing body that does a lot. I mean, I'm a critic of U.S. soccer. I'm a critic of Major League Soccer. But to say the Premier League is doing more to grow soccer in the United States, they're doing more to maybe grow a certain degree of soccer fandom. And I think that has a lot to do with NBC, but I would grant you that. And I think these fan fests are great in terms of engaging those fans. But I would not make a blanket statement that they're doing more than MLS, which still does do a lot on the fan engagement level in their market. And that's the same thing as the Premier League. And I have a problem with that, with the fact that MLS is not widening the pool. And because there's no promotion and relegation, yeah, that's a big part of it. When you have a closed system, there's no interest in Major League Soccer, except in limited, you know, soccer geeky or you know, these kind of American exceptionalists outside of MLS markets. And U.S. soccer is a governing body, so I think they have fundamentally a different responsibility. But I think it's difficult. I think the bottom line is, Chris, everybody is out to try and get their own piece of the pie. The Premier League, to me, is a lot like the NFL and Major League Soccer in the way, you know, they're all about their league and their branding, and they have empowered the league a little more than leagues and the rest of Europe have. I mean, I guess this is a trend, but I talked about the club over league thing earlier. That's not necessarily the way the Premier League operates. Although, kudos to NBC during the Spurs match. They did change that graphic I complained about a couple weeks ago, where they did say they have not won a top flight title since 1990. They didn't say they've never won a Premier League title, which is in itself kind of misleading. But no, I don't think they've done more. I think these are great, but I certainly think MLS has done its share. They should be doing more, though. You and I can argue about this particular point, but we both agree that Major League Soccer has retrenched in the last few years and has made itself more about MLS branding, keeping money within Soccer United marketing, and trying – this is, I guess, the big theme of the week, Chris – trying to choke the game outside of MLS and outside of official channels which they control.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that the Premier League is looking at this opportunity, and they work very closely with NBCSN to host these fan fests, but they're looking at this as a way to really kind of increase the loyalty improve the loyalty of these fans and gain more fans and gain more viewers to be watching the Premier League. There's no doubt about that. It's a business initiative. And from NBCSN point of view, too, it's their initiative to try to grow that audience. So there's no doubt about that. I have seen zero proof of MLS doing anything outside of their markets to really grow soccer in this country. If anything, it's the opposite. And to me, yeah, there's always going to be different variations. Yeah, there's going to be some fans that are very snobbish that support their team, and that's all that happens, and they don't look outside of that. The same can be said for the other side too, where there's fans that just watch their Major League Soccer team and will not watch any other leagues from around the world. To me, that there's a way to actually combine both of this together. There's an opportunity to have soccer fans support their local team. So whether it's in Major League Soccer, USL, NPSL, you name it, but go watch their local team on a Saturday night or a Sunday night, and then watch their favorite club or their favorite team or their favorite league during the morning or mid-afternoon or whatever hours it is, and actually be able to do both. What I see is the Premier League putting in a lot of effort into trying to grow that audience. I see absolutely nothing from Major League Soccer in terms of what they're doing from the lower league side of things. I feel your pain, Kartik, in terms of even the frustration of a lot of fans not going out and supporting their local clubs. But the reality is it comes back down to me, there's a lack of promotion relegation. But so why should a local fan go to see his local team and support them if there's no chance of them of having a dream, of actually having a dream where that team could actually advance and go through the system and one day possibly, I mean, go to the top league or go to the second division. And that's, I mean, if you're in England and you're supporting Accrington Stanley or you're supporting, I don't know, Barnsley or whatever team it may be, no matter how small that team may be, that dream is always there that someday that team could advance and go higher up the table. And that's the incentive that the major incentive that drives people to go to those games. And you mean, and then they become hooked to that local team. But at the same time, they might watch Sky Sports and watch Manchester United or Liverpool later in the day.
Well, yes and no. Okay, I agree with you on promotion and relegation. I'm one of the foremost advocates for it in this country. At least I'd like to think I am. However, I have to say that part of it is community. And part of going – Accrington Stanley is never going to be in the top flight. There's a very minute chance. And even clubs that have been in the top flight in the past, like Oldham and Swindon, et cetera, Luton, so much of it is community. We do not have that here for whatever reason. And that was one of the talking points in the summit, is local amateur soccer, local lower league professional soccer, something to give community. In the UK, in Germany, less so in Spain and Italy, but in the UK and Germany are the best examples. England and Germany in particular, those leagues, there is a lot of just embracing of community or community neighborhoods. Here, people gravitate towards the top. We're a very top-down sports culture, which also explains in many ways the popularity of the Premier League in this country, is that the Premier League clubs that are popular are the top six clubs. It's not there aren't people running around with West Brom paraphernalia that I can see all over the place. So it's one of those things where I think maybe culturally we're very different than Europe, and we're not as into community. We're not as into embracing local community institutions in our neighborhoods. But I think that might change with exposure. And I think one of the things that really helps is that one of the clubs that really helped that in the U.S., I have to say, and they haven't been in the Premier League in 10 years now, it's Portsmouth. The number of newer football fans that gravitated to Pompey because it was a cool, smaller community club, and now might do it again because of American ownership and the involvement of the Supporters Trust. Those are the sorts of things that move the conversation, I think, and move the attitudes more than and now what's happening at Blackpool. Those sorts of things more than most of what happens in the Premier League. So I would say, yeah, English football is an inspiration, but in a lot of ways it's English football outside the Premier League, outside the top clubs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking at Portsmouth or looking at some of these other clubs like a Blackpool, like you mentioned there too, still the reality is that these clubs have an opportunity to go up or go down. We've seen Blackpool go up and down. And that's something there's that to me is the thing that's missing in the United States. And that's the thing that actually would probably help build communities. It would help build soccer fans to congregate around local teams and say, hey, let's go ahead, and there's a pathway here to go up to the top or you know, second division, whatever it may be. Let's work together on this. There's a common goal. Right now, there isn't a common goal. The common goal would be to have the team survive. I mean, that's for a lot of the lower leagues. I mean, that's kind of the goal is what can we do to get this team to survive for another season? Yeah, I mean that's a whole different ball game. You mean
oftentimes surviving for another season. So there are people arguing we do have promotion and relegation in this country because you see all these USL and NASL teams now in MLS, Orlando, Minnesota, Montreal, etc., Cincinnati now, and that you have teams that have relegated. Well, they self-relegate because of that economic reality that playing higher league doesn't make a difference. Final point, but this is a huge one based on everything we've talked about. There's MLS and then there are other leagues. That is the general attitude of fans in the United States. So the difference between playing in the second division and the fourth division or a semi-pro is negligible from an appearance and a marketing standpoint, unless you have $150 million lying around or the potential to get an investor with that and you want to move to Major League Soccer. There really is no advantage to playing in a division for the most part.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, finally Fox Sports is bringing the Bundesliga back to over-the-air Big Fox, beginning this Saturday with their Klassiker at 12:30 p.m., Dortmund and Bayern. Dortmund are 2 points ahead in the table as we enter this huge match in Munich at the Allianz Arena. I should mention, Chris, the one moment of my inappropriate behavior as the NC at the I don't call it inappropriate, but off of the cup behavior at the soccer summit as the MC was when I saw Alcacer had scored the goal, the first one, the free kick, 90+1 to give Dortmund the lead in that match, Bayern drew. So Dortmund moves back ahead, top of the table. For whatever reason, this title race this season has gripped me just because Munich have won so many titles in a row, I guess. And there's something about this Dortmund team and the way they play that I like. There'll be also over-the-year matches May 11th and May 18th, which are the penultimate match day and the final match day. I'm assuming those will be title race. They're to be determined. I'm assuming there'll be title race implications. Remember, the kickoffs, those for those two match days are simultaneous. So it'll be 9:30 a.m. Eastern both weekends.
Kartik, next up, we've got some complaints we received this past weekend. And I received a ton of complaints. I was, again, at one of my kids' soccer games, and I was getting texts and tweets and all sorts of emails from people around the country saying, why is NBC SN showing commercials during games? So I was like, what? So anyway, I checked into this, and what happened is, I figured out that the issue was not with NBCSN. The national feed was showing the game as usual with no commercials during the match itself. What had happened is that DirecTV subscribers nationwide, for whatever reason, DirecTV had been inserting commercials into the game. So it was the Man United-Watford game and the Everton-West Ham game. There were about three commercials in all. Some of them were for Dairy Queen. Some of them were for in-house DirecTV ads for their, I guess, pay-per-view movies. And anyway, so I reached out to NBCSN and confirmed with them that that was not an issue nationwide. I reached out to DirecTV to find out, okay, was this a mistake? Was this something somebody had pressed the wrong button or what it was? I never heard back from DirecTV. So hopefully this was an isolated instance and hopefully this won't happen again. But yeah, if you're a DirecTV subscriber, to me, at this point in time, this is really not DirecTV. This is AT&T. DirecTV has gone. The name is there. This AT&T company is acting very differently than DirecTV in the past. DirecTV in the past was the number one place to go to if you could afford it for soccer in terms of all the channels. You name it, any soccer channel, they had it. That's not the case anymore. They've dropped beIN Sports and the beIN Sports en Español. And here we have some issues with commercials during games, which is sacrilegious. But hopefully it was a mistake and hopefully it won't happen again. But I'd heard from other people, too, that the same thing happened during Walking Dead recently. So there seems to be some issues on the DirecTV's side. Moving on, Kartik, some more news in regards to streaming in this case.
Yeah, so Jonathan Tannenwalder, a friend who's been on this show from the Philly Inquirer, has talked about, and he gave me a heads up this was coming, so I knew the article was coming when he published it late last week, about the situation with the Philadelphia Union not being online, not having a streaming partner, being the only team in the Philadelphia area among college and professional teams, and they have five major colleges there, so that's a total of 10 including them, but not the nine other teams all have some degree of streaming package, streaming component for its local fans. Apparently the union is looking for a rights fee, similar to what DC United and Cincinnati have gotten from Flow Sports. MLS, of course, has a deal for out-of-market streaming with ESPN Plus, but that blacks out the union games in the Philly market as far as replays are concerned, as far as on-demand. So, and some of the areas that don't get because it's a local market catchment area. Some of the markets that don't get the over-the-air coverage that the union have on television then are blacked out on ESPN Plus for the live telecast. So it's a real problem if you're a Philly Union fan and you want to stream the games. And it appears like they want a rights fee, and they're looking maybe for a Flow Sports or somebody like that rather than making it more accessible to their fans.
Now, speaking of the fan fest that happened in Boston this past weekend with the Premier League and how the Premier League is actively trying to grow their audience, well, La Liga is doing something different in this regard. And what they're doing is they're launching a English language documentary series in North America, and it's going to be called The United States of La Liga. It's going to be launching this summer, and it's going to be 12 episodes ahead of the 2019-2020 season. The first completed episode features a Deportiva La Coruña fan from Brooklyn, and basically what La Liga is doing right now with Relevant Sports and the partnership that they have is that they're shopping this documentary around to the streaming services out there, presumably Netflix or an Amazon or others, to see which one would be interested in actually acquiring this. So the idea, to me, is good. I just hope it's not going to be like the We Are LAFC series, which was really kind of really propaganda, kind of a glorified infomercial. I never did get around to watching the rest of that program. I just was really turned off by the first episode and part of the second episode, so I didn't get past that. But hopefully La Liga will look at this and try to create something that's more similar to Sunderland Till I Die, or something that's more authentic, something that feels more independent. So we'll have to wait and see, but hopefully it'll be a good one, and that'll be coming out. I'm sure we'll have the news on that in the next few months. Last but not least, Kartik, one more item.
Yeah, the FCC has rejected beIN Sports' latest carriage complaint against Comcast. The Federal Communications Commission dismissed what is now the third complaint that beIN has filed against Comcast Xfinity. As our listeners, I'm sure, are all aware of, beIN has been off of Comcast since this past summer. So it's been almost a year now, or 9 or 10 months. And it's been very, very hard going, for particularly for La Liga fans. But there doesn't seem to be any solution for this. And let's go over the numbers, what has actually happened. We've talked a lot about this on the show and how we have to maybe put an asterisk next to some of the La Liga ratings this year. Since DirecTV and Comcast dropped beIN Sports, and we're talking about beIN Sports in English specifically, it was in 22 million homes. Now it's in the U.S. Now it's in 15.4 million homes. So almost halved, not quite halved, but that's why for La Liga's purposes, they've got to find a solution to this. And obviously beIN has to find a solution to it also. But from the league standpoint, La Liga, and the exposure of two of the greatest brands in football, this has not been a good year.
In that article that reported this news, that broke the news from Sport Business, the article mentioned a couple of times that this is really a tough time for beIN Sports and puts the future of that network in doubt in the United States. I wouldn't go that far. There are definitely issues. There's definitely some financial issues not being in the homes of, DirecTV and Comcast. Hopefully there's a way to continue operating. And, they still have La Liga. If they can get back into DirecTV, that would make a huge difference. Based on this latest FCC complaint, basically, it looks very unlikely that Comcast is going to be in the future. But if they can get DirecTV, they have Copa Libertadores too, Copa Sudamericana, etc., etc. I'm a little bit more optimistic about their future chances, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. Going into TV ratings, Kartik, this past week we had some big numbers. 1.2 million people tuned in to watch Club America against Tigres on Univision and Univision Deportes Network on Saturday night. The Liverpool Spurs game for the Fan Fest was 1.04 million on NBCSN and Telemundo. Then you had Man United against Watford. 493,000 people watched that one, and so on and so forth. The Fan Fest, actually, the one thing I didn't mention is that Liverpool, who are owned by Fenway Sports Group, who also owns the Boston Red Sox. They couldn't have timed that any better in terms of having the event next to Fenway Park, having Liverpool in that big game on that Sunday, having Liverpool win late in that match, a very fortunate goal, but it is what it is, and then seeing the fans just go crazy. It was good television, and that was part of the plan. I mean, we had an article on worldsoccertalk.com that talked about Fenway Sports Group and that they were working with NBC to try to get the Fenway location set up, and they got that. That was just part of it. I mean, it wasn't just Fenway Sports Group. All the Premier League and the clubs were working closely together with NBC. But a huge coup there for NBC, Fenway Sports Group, Liverpool, and the Premier League. It ended up being a big hit. So, Kartik, we won't go into all the numbers. We will post all the numbers from these games from the past week on worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage. But I do want to zero in on a few numbers here. And that is Major League Soccer, unfortunately. We have to keep on coming back to this because it's still an issue. I mean, we had the LA Galaxy game against Portland on ESPN2 on Sunday night. 217,000 viewers, definitely a lot lower than what they're used to. Orlando against DC United on FS1. I watched this game. It was a good game. On Sunday night from 6:30 to 8:30 Eastern. 130,000 viewers, and that's way below FS1's average for games that they have for Major League Soccer. That's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. In the next week, I'm going to be publishing some new research data to show that MLS has not closed the TV ratings gap against the Premier League and Liga MX. In fact, in the recent number of years, the gap is widening. So while MLS TV ratings are pretty static, I mean, year over year, they're increasing by about 5%. This past year, the 2018, the reason it was 5% was because of two things. One is how well the ratings were doing on Univision. They were down on ESPN, down on FS1. And then the other thing was the World Cup. So they had the World Cup games, and they would do a doubleheader and have the World Cup. And right after that, they'd have an MLS game on Fox. And that would artificially stimulate and inflate those numbers to be a decent number. So it's, for 2019, it's going to drop. It's definitely going to drop, and they're going to have a tough time trying to get anywhere close to what 2018 numbers were. So in the past decade, MLS has expanded into different cities, Atlanta, Orlando, Philadelphia, Minneapolis, as well as second teams launching in New York and Los Angeles. Next year, they're going to have Miami. In Miami, the only reason they've stuck with Miami for this long is because it's a big TV market. It's a TV market they're not in. It's a key one if you want to be reaching the Hispanic demographic. And they're not in it yet, but they will be in it next year. So that's the reason they stuck with Miami. At the same time, over the past decade, we've had all these stars come to the league to try to boost TV ratings. Wayne Rooney, Zlatan, Andrea Pirlo, David Villa, Henri, Kaká, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba, Ashley Cole, Bastian Schweinsteiger, but none of them have boosted TV ratings. So there you go. You've got, expansion of teams across some of the biggest TV markets in the United States. You've got all these stars coming into the league, and there's been no sizable increase in TV ratings. It's a worrying times, Kartik. If I was Major League Soccer, I'd be I'd bang my head against the wall, going like, what do we have to do to go ahead and cause any type of bump in TV ratings? But, outside of the World Cup, when it's not a World Cup year, what can we do? What are your thoughts on this? Do you think it's something where it's they're frustrated, or do you think they're just kind of going along with it?
No, they're frustrated, and quite honestly, Grant Wall last week on Planet Football gave them a potential solution, which is to talk about promotion and relegation and maybe open the league up. But that's something they seem unwilling to do. So I think they're frustrated by it, but the trade-off for them is opening the league up and talking about everything we've talked about earlier on this show, which is an open system and pro-rel, and they're just not willing to do that. So that's the solution. If there's a silver bullet solution, that's it. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't think there is a solution at this point.
At the same time, I wouldn't blame the TV networks. I think the TV networks such as ESPN, Fox, and Univision, it's not their fault that the numbers are what they are. They're doing a decent job of covering the league. I mean, Fox, for all the criticisms I've given to them over the years, I mean, you name it, it's a long list of criticisms. With Major League Soccer, they put their effort in. They promote it. They definitely go all in on Major League Soccer. And they try their hardest. You can tell by watching the broadcast, they definitely care about the league. They want it to grow. Same with ESPN. ESPN goes for kind of a different audience, a little bit more, say, cosmopolitan audience. But they absolutely try their hardest to help this league. Univision, a big boost on the Spanish language side. And again, they're committed, 100% committed. So all of these broadcasters are committed. The players, of course, are trying their hardest. But at the end of the day, to me, it comes down to the structure of the league. It comes down to the structure of the season. Is that, I've said this before, but about 80% of the season are games that are not meaningful. You can have a late surge of wins late in the season and still get into the playoffs, which is the ultimate goal for a lot of these teams. But if you listen to the MLS talking heads or read the journalists, I mean, you would think that they're in a bubble. I mean, MLS is bigger, better, and stronger than ever before, but they can't quantify that. The only thing that they quantify that with usually are attendance numbers. And this past week, the Cincinnati Reds got crushed in the media and in social media because they had an attendance at one of their home baseball games of about 7,000 people. But looking at the pictures of the crowds that in that Reds game, that appeared to be kind of an accurate number. The difference with Major League Soccer is that even though they've had some really big attendances at a lot of these crowds, whether it's Seattle or Atlanta or other cities, there are many attendances that look much lower than the 7,000 number. And you can just look at the recent crowd for the New England Revolution home game against Cincinnati, where it looked like there was maybe, I don't know, maybe 3,000 people there, if you're lucky, maybe 4,000. And if MLS reported those numbers, I mean, there would be kind of crisis, there'd be headlines, there'd be all this drama in social media, just like the Cincinnati Reds, and in the media, people kind of saying, okay, even the sky is falling. We're not saying that by any means, but the MLS, the only numbers that they can't control, that they can't influence, are the TV ratings numbers. And the TV ratings numbers are the only true measurement of the success of MLS that can be independently reported. Now, the attendance numbers, they can inflate those numbers and talk about tickets distributed. There's lots of different things that they can do, which is why I keep on coming back to the TV ratings and why I think World Soccer Talk, I don't think anyone else is talking about this. This is a major issue. The league is expanding. It's growing in terms of number of teams, which is fantastic. If you happen to live in one of the cities, I mean, it's awesome. You have a local team that you can go to. Some teams are better than others. Some teams have probably a better community or better supporters groups than others. But there's an opportunity to actually watch that. But outside of those cities, pretty much, I mean, the entire country is not watching these games. And why aren't they watching these games? And it keeps coming back to, they're not meaningful. Why are they not meaningful? Because there's no promotion or relegation. Imagine in one season, Kartik, if New England Revolution and Colorado Rapids ended up at the bottom of Major League Soccer and they got relegated. I don't think there'd be too many people crying wolf about that. But could you think of two teams from USL or any other lower leagues that could go up to Major League Soccer, get promoted, that would cause a rush of excitement, that would be some entertaining teams to look at, that have a good community base? Any two that come to mind?
Yeah, Louisville and Sacramento right off the bat.
Yeah, and that would be a huge plus for Major League Soccer. That would probably mean more people interested in watching games on television if there was a chance of teams going up, teams going down. Just imagine Louisville's got a huge supporter base. And I know that region extremely well in terms of, I mean, they're crazy about Louisville. And Sacramento would be a fantastic way to go ahead and get promoted up and see how they did. It changes everything. Then all of a sudden it's okay. Well, actually, now let's watch more of this league. Let's get more into this. And in many ways, MLS is holding back itself. It's holding back the growth of not just Major League Soccer, but also the growth of soccer in this country. And when we've talked about this a few times in this podcast, it keeps on coming back to that same thing. So bottom line is, from my point of view, that MLS fans and the media need to step outside their bubble and face the facts. Now, Kartik, list the mailbag. First up is JP. He says, Christopher, I just got around to the mailbag section and I appreciate your reply. You say the constant excuses for MLS ratings aren't justified, but I still think there are a myriad of legitimate reasons for the low ratings that you're not considering. Okay, so JP continues. He says, here I go, apologizing for MLS again, and I'm not even a big fan, but here goes. Soccer in this country is still probably the fifth most popular sport, if we're being generous. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, college football, and college basketball are all likely ahead and can debate whether hockey is more or less popular. Given that, when MLS is up against other sports, it is likely to lose the battle for fans' attention. Since MLS matches are usually at times other American sports are scheduled, it rarely gets the opportunity to be the only game in town. Springtime, there is the NCAA tournament, NBA and NHL playoffs. Fall and winter is NCAA football and NFL. The summer, it's only up against Major League Baseball. And this is probably where the ratings are the best, but would suspect even events like Wimbledon or the US Open tennis tournament or golf tournaments, Kartik, might come up on top of MLS.
He forgot to mention golf, and golf is more popular than soccer in this country as a spectator sport. Tennis is not, but go ahead.
Right, and let me just chime in here to respond to JP, is that there's no doubt that there are other sports in this country that are more popular than soccer. So the NFL, NBA, and others definitely. The reality is that we're not expecting that Major League Soccer or soccer is going to be number one sport anytime soon. But what we do expect is that the ratings will increase, that soccer grows in popularity, that against these other sports that, at a minimum, it does the same. But you mean it does much better year over year of Europe. And a 5% growth is not a big increase by any means. So at the same time, though, too, you look at the first 5 weeks of the MLS season compared to last year. And last year, it was the same thing. You mean March Madness happened, the NBA, NFL, all these things are still the same thing. They're on the same calendars year after year. And yet, ratings are 27% down this year compared to last year. So what's different? These other teams, these other leagues aren't any different. And while, JP, your points are very valid, there's an issue here. What is the issue? Why are soccer fans not showing up and watching these games? Part of it, Kartik, I think, is that MLS has a choice. Do they go after the hardcore soccer fans, or do they go after mainstream casual sports fans? And you mean, I'm pretty sure, I mean, they're looking at the mainstream casual sports fans and say, okay, that is our demographic, that is our audience, that's a target audience, that's who we should go after. And at the same time, the hardcore soccer fans, they probably think, okay, well, we're not going to win them over, so let's not go down that path. And that's the path that they have chosen. They have chosen the path of the NFL, the NBA, the Major League Baseball. And it's not working. It's not working because the hardcore soccer fans are probably going to say, okay, well, am I going to watch a Barcelona against Villarreal game on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon, or am I going to watch Colorado against New England Revolution? You mean, so there's you mean that's kind of a simple equation there. The casual fans, the mainstream fans, that's difficult. That doesn't happen overnight. And as we've seen with these numbers, it's not improving. So they're kind of caught in between where maybe it's better to go after the hardcore fans, like we said before, too, and have them be the fans that will watch their favorite team on television and then go to the games at nighttime, which is probably what's happening now, except they're not watching it on TV. So there are many, many issues that Major League Soccer has. It's not going to be an easy fix by any means, but one of the fixes is the calendar. In 23 years, Major League Soccer has been around for 23 years, Kartik. And the first season of Major League Soccer was in 1996. In 23 years, the calendar really hasn't changed at all. 23 years ago, the first season of Major League Soccer, the season started in the first week of April. and ended in late October. This season kicked off in March and will end on November 10th, and with a lot more teams now than there were in 96. So the calendar really hasn't changed much. That's part of the equation. That's part of the thing that's so frustrating with Major League Soccer is, why aren't they changing things? Looking at the calendar and saying, okay, let's just change things up to make this work. And I think the reason is because they're comfortable in their own existence in terms of not messing with the attendances. It's a working formula. And to change the calendar is going to change things quite completely. But it has to be done, Kartik, because otherwise, I mean, having the games played or having the final or having the title race in the summertime would be massive if there was promotion, relegation, open system. So a lot of the things we've been talking about, those are positive changes that would have a huge impact on Major League Soccer, but I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah, and anytime I try to discuss the calendar, the gloom, that's even worse than the promotion and relegation discussion. You hear about how people will freeze, and they don't even consider that you could schedule creatively and how soccer will die in this country. So there's even more opposition. I've talked about the opposition to promotion and relegation. There's even more opposition among kind of elites in the game to discussing calendar change, even though when you talk to people who know the sport at an international level, they think that that's a fundamental part of changing the soccer culture here, is to change the calendar. But topic for another show, yeah. Perhaps another time.
Yeah, and one more point about JP's feedback, and it's a long one, so I won't read the whole thing, but he says, contrast this with the European leagues. They get the benefit of usually being the only sport to watch on a weekend morning and also early afternoon when college football ends in December and the NFL ends in January. You would know this better than I do, but do EPL ratings for the 12:30 match improve in December, January versus September through November? The answer to that direct question is yes, definitely. The December, January numbers are usually much higher than September, November. September, November numbers are pretty decent, but usually December, January definitely do go up. Part of the other reason for that, too, is that people are on break. People are on, whether it's break from school or break from work, so there's more people at home watching these games. And there's nothing much else on if you're a soccer fan, especially if you're watching the Premier League. And there's, the La Liga takes a winter break. Pretty much all the European leagues take a winter break except for the Premier League. But the other thing, JP, just to mention this too, is that, yes, European leagues have a huge advantage, but you look at Liga MX. Liga MX plays on Saturday afternoons, Saturday evenings, Sunday afternoons, Sunday evenings. And while that's a different target demographic, those numbers are still huge. And people are watching those games rather than watching Major League Soccer or rather than watching, say, NBA or whatever sports are on. Let's move on to the next listener mailbag, and that's Sam. He says, with regard to your discussion on MLS ratings last week, I'm a new MLS fan in the San Jose market as of last year. I do not have any cable TV service and therefore only watch the games on television, which are on Big Fox. I have ESPN Plus, which I got for MLS. I'll watch Champions League games at the bar sometimes, and I'll stream Athletic Bilbao games at home, but I don't feel there is any real competition for my eyes on the weekend. That's just my personal experience, but I wonder how common it is. It would be interesting to see if the TV ratings drops are at all offset by year-over-year growth in streaming. Anyways, I enjoy the show. Keep it up. So the streaming argument is something that's always mentioned whenever we mention TV ratings. Then people say, like, oh, well, MLS fans stream a lot of these games. And yes, streaming is important and it is growing, but those numbers are minuscule in comparison to the TV numbers. And the MLS numbers for viewing numbers are very, very small. Otherwise, MLS would be reporting those numbers, sharing those numbers, getting the word out about how well those games are actually doing. So yes, there are people watching and streaming games on Major League Soccer, but at the same time, there are people streaming games on for the Premier League or for the Bundesliga. Just this past weekend, the Liverpool Spurs game, as one example, the number of people that streamed that game, so there was 1.04 million people watched the game on television. The number of people that watched the game on streaming on NBCSN or the NBC Sports app was, I believe, 63 or 73,000. I can't remember which number it was. But say 65,000 people watched that game. So for a Major League Soccer game on ESPN Plus, it's probably a tenth of that. So you're talking about maybe like 6,000 to 10,000 people maybe watching a game there. Ben Salaheen says, would you happen to know if TNT is planning to televise all the remaining Champions League games from now on? And the answer to that question is yes, TNT will broadcast the quarterfinals, semifinals, and the final on TNT, but not every game. So coming up this next week, only one game per day is on TNT. All of the games are on BR Live, and all the games are on television on Univision or Univision Deportes Network or Unimas or Galavision. So, but TNT will broadcast all the way through to the final unless something changes. Nuke says, and this is for you, Kartik, what are your thoughts on the explosive growth in the women's game in Europe? Is this the nail in the coffin for a U.S. women's league, since the best will ultimately have more opportunities overseas?
It could be the nail in the coffin. This is kind of a loaded question, because what we've seen is that Jill Ellis and her staff still, and I think the U.S. Federation in general, still prefer to select players who are playing in NWSL for the national team. You saw that with Crystal Dunn. When she went overseas, she didn't get selected. She comes back to the North Carolina Courage. She's right back in the team, even though she's playing out of position at left back. It's a really good question, because I think when you talk – now, there was a great podcast this week. I highly recommend it. ESPN FC. Seb Salazar sitting down with Christine Lilly, Brandi Chastain, and Kate McGrath. And they talked about this issue. And Kate McGrath, who obviously covers the game at a very high level, talked about how the coaching is better in Europe now in the women's game, and how the commitment of men's clubs to bring in top technical staff has really elevated the game there. And also, when I talked to someone in the game here in the U.S., they mentioned there are lots of people who go and get their UEFA Pro license. There's a glut of coaches in some Western European countries. And rather than sit around and wait for an opportunity to open at a professional men's club, they go and coach women's clubs. And so you're getting elevated coaching there. And we don't have that, quite frankly, going on in NWSL or in the college game here in this country. So the answer to your question is it would be a yes if the Federation didn't take such a negative view of it. But who knows? Jill Ellis may not be the coach after June, after the World Cup, after July, and you might have another coach who has a different attitude towards this. So very well could impact NWSL's long-term viability and whether they're around or not, quite frankly.
Next up is John Fino. He says, hello, Kartik and Christopher. I wanted to ask you, I love John Champion's work, and his pronunciation of Cincinnati is very endearing to me, a kid born and raised here. Does ESPN have any plans for John Champion to call other sports when MLS is not playing? And to paraphrase comic strip guy from The Simpsons, is that his real name? So yes, it is his real name. John Champion is John Champion. ESPN has no plans to have John broadcast any of the sports other than soccer anytime soon. And Kartik, he does ask another question too, which I don't have the answer to this, but perhaps maybe you do. Is there a website with advanced stats on MLS or Premier League teams, i.e. I would love to see expected goals from a match?
Yes, it's 538.com. They do the expected goals thing for both those leagues and for a number of other leagues around the world, including Bundesliga, the championship. I think they have USL this year, too, now, finally.
Awesome. Hey, good tip. All right, last but not least, JP gets another comment in this week. He says, in regards to the Apple TV app, won't be long before we've come full circle and streaming consolidation will make it just like cable, where there will be mandatory starter bundles loaded with things we don't want. What we truly want and still don't have is real a la carte, where everything is on the table, available through one service or device, and we create our own bundle. Right now, the streaming bundles come close, but none fulfills everything, and all still come with some channels that most of them we don't want. So, for example, he says, PlayStation View has no beIN Sports. Sling TV has no NESN. Fubo has no ABC or ESPN. YouTube TV has no beIN Sports or NFL Network or Red Zone. This is just for sports content. Sure, another list could be made for other entertainment options. And these are fantastic points by JP. Absolutely. The market, the industry, is moving towards more and more bundles, and yeah, it's and the prices are increasing. It's not as bad as cable by any means, but a lot of the players that are the big players in the streaming space are from the cable slash satellite TV industry. So Sling TV is owned by the Dish Network, so on and so forth. But I mean, so yeah, absolutely. I think that's the way things are moving. That would be the true difference makers if you did have a streaming service where it was truly a la carte and you could pick and choose exactly what you wanted. Whether that'll happen or not, I doubt it. I would love to see it. I doubt it, though. You can always reach us through email via web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com on the podcast thread, and we'll be sure to mention those in the next episode. So thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, heading into another, what should be a tip-top weekend of football from around the world, what should you do?
Enjoy your football.